Welcome to Amandla, The Power Within, a podcast about the questions we all face as we navigate life, love, work, purpose, and the absurdity of middle life. Together, we'll laugh, learn, and dig deep into what it means to face this season with courage, grace, and authenticity. Let's unlock the power that's already within us. I am so excited today because not only is this the first episode of Amandla with Mbel, but I have in studio somebody who helped me get to the point of actually starting this podcast at all. So welcome to Alicia Peterson. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about her right now, but good afternoon, Alicia.
Good afternoon, and thank you. Thank you for having me. I am stoked to be here.
I'm so excited. So I met Alicia about 18 months ago, and Alicia is an executive coach, one of the many coaches, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that. But she's an executive coach, and she was offered to me basically in a new role that I had just gotten into in an organization. I was in a very senior role, and I thought, what a great opportunity to figure out what's going on with my team, to build them up, how I was as a manager. And I was going in with this very clear idea of, I'm just going to figure out how to work better. And I started the sessions with Alicia and very quickly realized that there were more personal self-development things that I still needed to do. Really, a lot of things that were coming up for me was around my approach to life and work, the beliefs that I had about life and work, my positive and negative beliefs about myself, you know, this real place of authenticity that I thought that I was at that wasn't really there. And we had so much to unpack. All we had was 10 sessions, but probably somewhere about like session six, I think, Alicia, probably about session six, something started to shift in me. Eventually, I came quite unstuck. I was feeling very stuck, clearly, and I started to get a little bit unstuck. I eventually decided to leave my job and resign, and I'm sure Alicia can maybe talk about that a little bit. She didn't convince me. It just came to a real realization that I wasn't working in my best interest anymore, and I decided to resign from my job. And one of the things that I decided to do, other than start my own business, was to start this podcast, which has been haunting me for 10 years. I've had so many people say to me, you should start something. You should be able to talk to others and really have conversations that matter. And I'm so excited because we're going to tell you what Alicia is going to be doing on the podcast a little bit later as well. So who is Alicia? Alicia owns and she's the founder and CEO of Nurturing Growth Trading, which is a leadership and development coaching organization, 20 years coaching experience. And I think that's important because I think there's as many coaches as there are DJs these days. Right. Alicia's a real coach, with 20 years experience. She's been in the business and been running her own business for 17 of those years. She works in deep coaching, in meta coaching, team coaching, mind and body coaching, and Enneagram coaching. And I'm actually going to ask you a little bit about that, Alicia. So what are all of these coaching modalities? What does it even mean to be, one, a coach in the real sense? I think maybe to also give the people that listen a sense of when you should know whether you're being coached or duped. and then what are these different modalities before we unpack a little bit about me?
Thank you, Mpeo, for this opportunity and giving me the space to explain a little bit more about coaching. And before I do that, I first want to say something about you and your journey. Because having met you 18 months ago, every now and again when I meet a new client is, you know, there's either the spark or there isn't a spark. And when I met you, you were full of enthusiasm. You were excited about the opportunity and you had shown such great interest in understanding yourself better. And you were so excited about being the best leader possible. So if I can move from there into what coaching is. So coaching is not therapy. It's not counseling. Coaching is for primarily mid-level leaders and senior leaders and people who are saying, I know I've got potential. I know that I have a lot to offer this world, but something is not coming together. Something is missing. There's a missing piece somewhere. And so a lot of people get stuck. And we will go into that a bit later, you know, why people get stuck. Mm. And what a lot of people do when they're stuck is they want to figure it out for themselves, mm. you know, or they speak to their friends. What you did is you really took this opportunity to understand yourself better, to realize your potential. That is what coaching is. So in terms of my qualifications as a Meta coach, Deep coach, Enneagram coach, I had the good fortune of becoming a coach in 2005. That was my first training. And then I fell in love with coaching. I realized, oh my gosh, there's so much here. I was excited that I found a tool that can truly unlock potential. That then took me on my journey of exploring different coaching modalities. I started out as a Meta coach, which is an NLP coach.
So what does that mean?
Neuro-linguistic programming. And it says that you can learn a lot about people when you listen to their language, and their programming comes from their language. I love that approach. It is fascinating. And for me, there was more. I was curious about, I found some of those answers in the Enneagram. And we'll speak more about the Enneagram. But in summary, in short, the Enneagram works with 9 different personality styles. It provides you the map of each style, the strengths, the limitations, the behavior patterns, the blind spots, and the growth path. And that was fascinating. I really, really enjoy working with the Enneagram. And then beyond that, or before I go beyond that, the Enneagram is based on the principle of presence. Mm. The more we are present, the more we can see our behavior clearly and we can self-correct. Brilliant for coaching. On top of that, I then studied mind-body coaching.
Okay.
So in other words, the body holds a lot of wisdom, and how do I as a coach tap into that wisdom?
And that's so fascinating, because if I think about my experience working with you, a lot of exactly what you're speaking about. So the Enneagram was a very powerful tool, and I feel like if you are somebody who is interested in kind of getting a sense of how you approach life and work, it's a very powerful tool.
Exactly.
I mean, as personality types go, there's so many of these tests, right, of these things that you can run, but I found it especially useful,
right,
in the way that you've just said that it's quite powerful. But also from a mind-body perspective, what I realized for myself was I was carrying a lot of my beliefs, a lot of the way that I was reacting to work and life, even though I understood something cognitively. I'm a smart person who can think through things. My body and my mind were saying completely different things. My mind was like, you're fine. My body was like, I'm struggling.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so it was very valuable for me to sit with you and to be able to, one, you were teaching me the language that I needed, or you were assessing even the language that I was using to speak about myself, my experiences, etc., and looking at how it was different to the way that my body was reacting. I'd come to you a lot, I'm suffering from headaches, my back is killing me, I'm feeling tense in my shoulders. You know, being able to ask me what was going on in my body also unlocked something in our coaching relationship that I really feel like is so valuable and was so powerful in helping me get unstuck. Because I don't think I realized how stuck I was when I first met you until you started asking me about what was going on in my body and what was going on in my mind. And so I think immediately then I almost want us to, and the reason why I brought you on, and for the listeners' perspective, is people often start podcasts and they are starting the podcast for whatever reason. And I really started it because there's a lot in my own journey that I see reflected in other people. There's a lot that I'm so interested in other people's experiences. I also have this belief that at middle age is something that is completely crazy for me, Alicia. it's wild. We're in this place where we've got aging parents and young children or adult children. I mean, I've got a mixture of both. I have three boys, one 23 and two kids that are under eight. One is seven and one is four. And there's also this, you're in the middle of what feels like the end of your career, maybe, but maybe a time when you should be unlocking it. There just feels like there's so much pressure to be getting things right. And that's why I wanted to be able to have a podcast where I could talk about my middle life issues, be able to speak to other people about how they are navigating it. But I know that the gift of getting to this point where I resigned from the job that I had and I started doing this podcast, just starting, came out of getting unstuck. So I want to be vulnerable with you as the listener around some of the things that I learned, some of the breakthroughs that I had, to get you to understand a little bit more about me as Mbeo, who's going to be hosting this podcast, Amandla with Mbeo, so that we can move forward and really unlock the power within all of us. And I'm hoping that the conversations that I have going forward are going to help you to do that. So I think the first one is the power of limiting beliefs. I really want to unpack that with you, Alicia, because I couldn't believe how many limiting beliefs I had about myself. I'm this outwardly very confident person who has done exceptionally well at work, who has a good friendship circle. I'm raising three boys. So I couldn't believe how many self-limiting beliefs I had. The worst being, in my opinion, is the fact that my self-worth was wrapped up in my competence. It was almost like if I wasn't good at work, if I wasn't good at doing, I wasn't good enough. No matter how much the rest of my world was giving me these things of you're a good friend, you're a good mom, you're whatever it may be, all of things I actually didn't realize I didn't believe until we started coaching. Can we talk a little bit about self-limiting beliefs, or let me just say beliefs and the power of them, whether they're limiting or not?
Absolutely we can. I just want to go back to something you said earlier on about the disconnect that you felt between your mind and your body and your experiences when you first came to coaching, because that is so true for so many people. When we don't pay attention to our lives, there's this inner dialogue, you know, we kind of convince ourselves that we are doing well, we are happy, we are, you know, we are thriving, etc. And when you notice that disconnect for yourself, something clicked, you know, and you became curious. And so that is a very important aspect of coaching. You're not going to change if you're not curious, you know. So you were open-minded, you were curious, you had high levels of self-awareness, but you were, you realized that there's this disconnect, what is going on here? And so we start growing and we start becoming the best versions of ourselves when there's alignment between the mind, the heart, the belly, and our actions. Yeah, so that was very clear with you. Now, coming over to the limiting beliefs, can you believe that the dictionary says that it defines a belief as a conviction that something is true even without proof?
That sounds like most of my beliefs. I mean, like, we had to unpack quite a bit about, there was a time when I was struggling because I was working so hard and I was really struggling with the belief that I am a good mother. I was really berating myself because of the fact that I felt like I wasn't spending enough time with my kids because of the amount of work I was doing. And of course, it's multi-layered. There was a reason why I could throw myself into my work and I wouldn't make time. And maybe we can unpack that a little bit. But I remember you saying to me, but have you not structured your life to be able to make your kids as happy as possible, even though you're working? And I'd never looked at it like that, to say, although you might not be present, there are things that you are doing that good mothers do, which is to ensure that there are things in place for their children to be as happy as possible.
Right.
Although, of course, one of the things that I eventually came to from a values perspective for me was that I really do value being present, and that just structuring their lives to be able to get what they need from their deputy mom, who I've got an amazing nanny and they've got an amazing father. There was a longing in me to be present for my kids. I needed to figure out how that was going to become more possible. And that really came from understanding that I needed a different relationship to with work.
Right.
Not to necessarily work less or work more, but to work differently. Right. And that the fact that being good at work wasn't the only thing that made me a worthwhile human being.
Right. And it's so tricky because remember, you were saying earlier on that you equated your worth with your competence. Now, isn't it true that at work is the place where we show up, you know, how competent we are? And a lot of people suffer from imposter syndrome, right? So if my inner dialogue says that I'm not good enough, then I'm going to want to overcompensate. I'm going to work harder, I'm going to have no work-life balance, etc. But coming back to the limiting belief, so if the belief says that my worth is equal to my competence, or my competence, you know, is whatever determines my worth, and that is my truth, then that drives the behavior. And it's so important to see that, because we get stuck in those patterns, and then that's where the disconnect comes in again. So you love your kids, you know what matters to you, but this limiting belief drives the show, right? Because you have to show that you are worthy because you are competent. And so that becomes an endless loop. You can't satisfy that loop. So when we start working with limiting beliefs, the first thing we need to do is to see it is just the limiting belief. It is not the truth. Once you can see that, then you can challenge it. For instance, what if I'm good enough the way I am? It's got nothing to do with my performance. Yeah. And then you start following that trail. If I am worthy just because, if I'm good enough, just the way I am, I have nothing to prove to no one. Then you start making different choices. And you start spending more time with the things that matter and your children who matter.
And but what makes, you know, what makes you be able to see that? And I think that that's such an interesting concept, because I feel like a lot of people would struggle to believe that outright at the beginning. You're worthy just because you are alive and breathing hot air.
Right.
Just because you are alive and breathing just hot air.
Just because.
You are worthy.
Right.
And you are enough.
Right.
And everything that you do or accomplish is an add-on to that enoughness.
Right.
Right. But knowing that is such a difficult thing to get to. And you know, that's, I think that's why I have this belief that everybody deserves. I feel like therapy and or coaching should be a basic human right. Because I think it's so difficult to get to that point by yourself, especially when you're smart and you're articulate in the workplace and you understand things and you're self-aware, that like I think I was when I met you.
Yeah.
But I had all these self-limiting beliefs. I couldn't believe how many you managed to unpack. And so for me, I think maybe just to be able to show the power of the Enneagram tool, or just how we worked together. When we did the Enneagram test, initially I came out as an 8, or I told you that I'd done it before and I was an 8, which is, I think it called an active controller. And when we unpacked a little bit more, you were like, no, actually you're an Enneagram 3. I forget what the actual definition of it is.
Yeah, so I think the winner.
The winner.
It's called the winner.
The winner, the performer.
And the achiever.
Imagine. Oh gosh, I sound like somebody who wanted to be head girl in school. It's terrible. Anyway, so I think what I'd love for us to do is to talk about the Enneagram type 3 and how it manifests in anyone's life who might be an achiever, performer kind of person, because I believe that there's probably a lot of listeners, just because of how we were brought up, the era that we're in, the age that we're at. A lot of people my age in their early 40s matriculated straight after apartheid ended. And so there is this baggage and this burden to achieve, to perform, to do better, that I think a lot of people carry. So what is that Enneagram type? And can you talk a little bit about what are the things that somebody with that kind of type needs to challenge about the things that they believe?
Yeah, fascinating. Again, I want to go slightly back to something that you said around the worthiness, you know. And when I provide, you know, talks or speak at my seminars and retreats, etc., I always ask the participants to pay attention to how we fight for our unworthiness. Yeah. So the notion that I'm good enough just because I'm breathing, I'm good enough just because I'm here, goes over people's heads. You know, it's like, no. If, for instance, and we'll talk about the inner critic at a later point, but we all have an inner critic that makes us believe that we have to work to earn a place. Yeah, we have to work for our worth. And that comes from what we call in coaching our shaping. And the shaping is our history, our early childhood story. And from the early childhood story, there are certain limiting beliefs that we spoke about that we get form. And then there's conditioned tendencies and or habits. So what does that mean? So moving into the type 3, the winner. So the early childhood experience of the winner might have been that she noticed that she was praised for being first in class. Or she was praised for you know, winning some race or the other, or she was a teacher's pet for, you know, getting good grades. Then the association that was formed is that, oh, I did something well, and then I was seen for having done that, and then, you know, voila, I'm good enough. And so that goes for all of us. We're not all type threes. There are 9 different styles. All of us are motivated by different things. But coming back to the type 3 who has been praised so much for doing, and then, of course, the focus of attention is going to go towards doing more.
Performing,
towards succeeding. And so what then happens is that that way of thinking can take you away from your true essence, your essential self, who knows that there's got to be more to life
than just doing.
Yeah, you know. And I know there's more to life, but it's so hard to break out of that cycle of performing because there's so many rewards that go with it.
But when you are always performing and when you are always striving, and you're always trying to achieve, first of all, I think there's a little bit of a need for external validation. Right? It's almost like you can never give yourself the kudos for having done the job. The job is only good if somebody else rates it as good.
Yes.
So you don't have self-evaluation that's positive. Yes. Positivity or negativity is on the outside.
Yes.
That for me is actually something that I realized that I did struggle with a lot, and something that we unpacked a little bit. But I think what I want to talk about, because I see this in a lot of people who maybe have the same Enneagram type as me, or maybe it's just a function of where we are in our lives, is the lack of self-care. Mm-hmm. How that can lead, why does it lead to a lack of self-care? It's almost like we put ourselves last. Mm-hmm. Even if it might not seem so, you know, you're going on holidays, you're going out to drinks with your friends, you're whatever it may be. But even those activities, I feel like, are sometimes external to yourself, to what mm-hmm. you need. Why does a winner performer kind of type just not care about themselves enough?
So that's quite a tricky question, because that driver or motivation doesn't necessarily come from the Enneagram type 3 style. Mm. It comes from the subtype.
Okay.
So there's 9 different styles, and then each style can be categorized according to a subtype, which is called self-preservation, social, or sexual, one-to-one. So in other words, all of us have a particular focus of attention. So you and I and 3 others can be in the same room, but we will notice different things in the room based on both our Enneagram style and our subtype. And so for this particular subtype, of which in your case, the self-preservation, which is about safety and security, you know, basic issues like self-preservation, was your blind spot. What then happens is that you put so much focus on performing, being the best, and waiting for the validation that comes from it, right? And so there's no time and space left for anything else, yeah? And so you will not even notice when you're hungry, when you're tired, etc. Again, coming back to the mind-body coaching approach, if you're not connected to yourself, you will not even notice the signals that the body sends.
Yes, until you're in the hospital.
Right.
Or taking medication, which at some point with you and I was just always tired.
You were burnt out at some point. But because you're such a high achiever and high performer, you know, you had to go beyond being burnt out, if that's even possible, before you could stop yourself. Yeah, because you were still delivering. You were still performing. You were still getting a lot of praises, right? And so that fed the ego. However, it came at a cost.
Yeah.
So there's always a cost. Mm. And so in coaching, we appeal to the client to pay attention to the whole picture. So yes, you're doing well at work, and yes, you are traveling, and yes, you're getting nice assignments, etc., and yes, you're getting acknowledged, and what is the cost? Yeah, and in your case, it was your health, it was not listening to that inner voice. You had a voice that also wanted attention, like your creativity, your authenticity, and then there was, you know, the relationships, especially with your kids. And so through the coaching and through, again, the paying attention, the self-observation with curiosity, you could become honest. So, and honesty is another intriguing theme for a type 3, because 3s are so focused on their image that they can lie to themselves. So we call the passion, which is the thing that we overdo of the 3, deceit. You know, the self-deceit. No, of course, you know, your desk is already full and somebody else requests something of you, and you just say, yes, it's me. I'm Superwoman.
I can do it all.
You know, I've got this. In the meanwhile, you don't.
You're tired. You don't have capacity. But you aren't willing to recognize it, because you can so easily deceive yourself into how much you can take on. And that, I suppose, doesn't just manifest itself at work. It actually then manifests itself everywhere, because then you're taking on too much in all areas of your life at the cost of you. I mean, I remember having a conversation with you once. I kind of had a breakthrough that was, you know, that was saying to myself that I actually want to be around for my kids and grandkids. I cannot allow work to take my life away from me. as dramatic as that might sound, it's a very real possibility for a lot of people. Even though you might not associate it directly, but whether it's the stroke or the depression or the chronic backache or the anxiety, that because of the way that you are linking your purpose so fully to work, you overcompensate in other areas, and then you basically just drive yourself into the ground. Literally, you could drive yourself to the grave. That's where I felt like I was. It was make a change or potentially not live long enough to see your children grow.
Right. And that was such a good catch, because my late brother passed away in his 50s, and he had it all. He was successful, handsome, big car, two failed marriages, and type 3, social type 3, so like the extreme 3, where the, you know, the image is super, super important, and just died of a heart attack. And just one day was here and the next day was gone. And, you know, it was such a shock to everybody. So, again, the body speaks to us. You know, there will be small
clues.
Yeah. And then, but if work is so super important, there isn't time to pay attention to it, right? So, so threes can really drive themselves very hard. And I want to just jump on something else you said. I want to speak about the passion of the style, and I'll use myself as an example, which is different from purpose. So when we caught up in the grip of the style, in other words, the habit of the style, you know, which comes from our shaping. So we just do things the way we've always done it. Now, I'm an Enneagram type 2, which is called the helper, the giver. So we are the natural caregivers of the world. And when I was in my 20s, I was a childcare social worker. And I was convinced that nobody cared about the kids as much as I did, which led to many fights between me and my then boss. Sorry, boss. And, you know, and I spent all my time and free time and work time and focus on, you know, being for there for these vulnerable kids. And then I would burn out every couple of months. And I would have to take off 2 weeks at a time, you know. And it was only later on in life when I got introduced to the Enneagram that I could see that that was basically just a habit of mind or my pattern. That was my comfort zone, you know. And when we get caught up in the patterns of the style, it takes us away from what truly matters. So it takes us away from our essence, you know, our essential self. So there is a part in all of us that's in touch with our deeper truth, that's in touch with our true purpose. And that's why I'm coming back to the difference between passion and purpose. So only when we have moved away from just operating from habit, and we can embrace like either a higher calling or the reason why we were born, you know, not from a place of compulsion, you know, like when for the type three or the, let me use the type two, for the type two, we give to get. So we don't know how to ask. We're not in touch with our needs. So we don't know how to ask for what we need. And then we give and we overgive to the point of burnout. But when we see ourselves again in action, we go like, why am I doing this? You know, and then we come back to selves and we reconnect to what truly matters to us, to our, the inner, true, authentic inner voice. Then we start making different choices, and then the results we get will be very different.
And I actually want to pick up on that, because I know that one of the things that was like such a huge aha moment for me when we were working together, and it was probably in like the second last session, was the language of choice.
Yes.
It was something that I felt like, of course, I mean, I've had many different jobs. I've left jobs. I've always felt like I am very empowered to make different choices in my life. But actually, I wasn't making choices. I was moving, say, from place to place, or before I got married, say, relationship to relationship, or whatever it may be. but I was moving with my pattern and just repeating the pattern.
Yes.
My life wasn't actually choiceful at all in terms of deeply the things that I choose to do, you know. So being able to say, I get to go to work, you know, versus I have to go to work. I get to go to work. Okay, am I really choosing that? Or I can say no to this thing or not. I wasn't actually making it on a day-to-day decision-by-decision level. I wasn't actually choosing things that would serve me at all, actually. They always served the pattern. And if the pattern, right? So my choices were actually always serving the pattern.
Yes.
You know, I wasn't choosing to work on a Saturday or a Sunday. If doing work on a Saturday would mean that I'm performing better than everybody else, would mean that I would get recognition at the end, I would make that choice.
Uh-huh.
Versus making the choice to say, this could also be done on a Monday and it will still deliver the same results because today I'm going to choose to spend time with my children.
Yes.
Right? So it felt like I was always choosing the pattern. That's it. Not choosing myself and not choosing what was right for me in that moment. And so actually when we're talking about that choicefulness and the voice, that voice that you're saying is quite authentic. The voice that says, well, actually, you'd prefer to spend time with your children today and you could do the thing that you feel like you have to do, you could do at another time, right? Or you could choose to actually go to work today instead of feeling like you're forced to stay with the kids when actually what you'd like to be doing is working.
Right.
Just making the choice that's right for you and authentic at that time. But there is this other voice that we work with all the time, which is the inner critic.
Right.
Which I struggled with. Gosh, the whole 18 months I was with you, you were like, you speak to yourself so badly, girl. You speak to yourself so badly. And I think I always knew that, but in a way, I felt like my inner critic was also a tough love kind. She was kind to me because she gave me tough love.
Yes.
Right? So my inner critic to me, the person that told me that this wasn't good enough, I haven't worked hard enough, you're lazy, or you haven't pushed hard enough, or, you know, you're not being a good mom. In a lot of ways, I turned her into my friend. But gosh, she's a cow.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's mean. Mean. So I want us to talk about the inner critic a little bit. Can we just talk about her? And well, and I say her because I'm talking about me, but what is a person's inner critic and how do you recognize when you are assessing a situation and when you are being critical without proof in a situation? Like what is that inner critic and how can someone recognize it?
Right. Yeah. So we're going to go deep now.
Let's go. Let's go.
Again, coaching is fantastic because it shows you where you are stuck, the places where you are stuck. And it shows you, for instance, the limiting belief or the conditioned tendency or the voice of the inner critic. So you were speaking earlier on about being choiceful. However, if we're not able to separate the voice of the inner critic and we don't know our personality style's ego, then it's hard to be choiceful. Then we're basically always just following the pattern. We're running after the pattern and the pattern runs the show. And all of us want to feel special. We want to feel like we belong. We want to feel like
we're worthy.
We're worthy. I'm seen by you. I'm understood by you. And most of us grew up in environments that wasn't self-nourishing. Then what happens is that...
Maybe just double-click on that a little bit. When you say environments that weren't self-nourishing.
What I mean by that is that all of us, from the time we are born, we have basic needs, you know, to be fed, to be dressed, and to be warm and dry and all of that. Then there's the psychological needs. You know, I want to feel that this family is happy that I was born. When I cry before I can speak, they know what my tears mean, right? So the extent to which my needs are being taken care of in when I'm small, that is either self-nourishing or not. when the adults are so busy with holding things together, and then I, as a small child, I disappear into the background, then there's panic that sets in. How am I going to do this? This thing called life is difficult, right? And that's when, so the personality style gets formed around the ages 5, 6, and 7.
A lot of us grew up like that in the sense that our parents were in survival mode.
Right.
Right? Our parents
exactly
were in survival
right.
mode.
Exactly.
They
right.
were working hard.
Exactly
they were making
right.
sure we had everything that we needed from a physical standpoint.
Exactly right.
They gave us as much psychological and emotional support that they had space to give.
Right.
And of course, look, I'm a big believer that a lot of our parents should have gone to therapy. And our children will also probably go to therapy. But if you're looking at it as a matter of fact of what kind of lives they were leading. And so as children, innocent children,
right.
you're coming into a world where you actually need to self-preserve so much.
Yes.
You have to figure it out. You have to make it work. And you are dealing with a lot of people with undiagnosed anger,
mm-hmm.
their own mental issues, their own struggles with self, their
mm-hmm.
own struggles with not being able to achieve the things that they wanted to achieve,
right.
or achieving them and holding on to that with
right.
their dear lives,
right.
right? So now with these children who are growing up in that, and so I understand that it's like, if I, as Mbeu was saying, in that time when my psychological needs might not have been met, and so when they were met was because I was winning and performing whatever my
right.
critic, right, the authentic part of myself, kind of you hide that. Who's that?
Yes.
That creative person.
It's a backseat.
Yeah.
Yes.
That creativity, that girl who likes to talk so much and maybe would like to be, I don't know what I want. I don't even
right.
know. I don't even remember what I wanted to be when I was younger, but I'm sure it's not anything that I wanted to be when I was in matric.
Right.
Because those roles and those job descriptions or occupations, I'm very clear now, were born out of this personality that I
right.
had developed
yes.
over time.
Yes.
And so maybe I do want us to kind of then, if you are protecting this identity, whatever that is, and sometimes I feel that people, it becomes an identity that isn't necessarily always a performer or achiever.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's elsewhere. It's,
yes.
yeah, you perform and achieve, but actually the identity that you're protecting is I'm very masculine.
Yes.
I'm a very masculine person.
Yes.
Or I'm extremely feminine on the other side.
Or I'm the breadwinner.
Or I'm the breadwinner, but it becomes an identity.
Right. And you become stuck in that identity.
Mm.
And let's use the one of I'm the breadwinner, because we have a lot of that going on in our society.
Mm.
I'm doing better than my dad. You know, I'm not a drunk. I work hard. I look after this family. But I spend like 10 hours a day at the office, and I'm a breadwinner. And you better praise me for that.
Mm.
Because, you know, I work hard for you all. And then the family comes and the family says, but we want to spend time with you.
Mm.
We want you to play with us. We want you to have ice cream with us.
Mm.
And then there's like this confusion. And now something else is expected of me. And then instead of, again, being curious, opening up the space, whether it's the mind or the heart, and inviting new information,
mm.
inviting conversations, we hold on to this, the stuck image.
Mm.
And so
what are you saying is that as a breadwinner, and you know, if we're talking about that, is you almost feel attacked for people wanting more than what you're
yes.
really
yes.
giving.
Yes.
Right? And that is not a, oh, yes, I'm bringing money to the table. And sometimes you're asking that, I suppose, of people who don't even have a concept of money and work and what it takes to work 12 hours.
Right.
They're just 5 or 7
right.
or 9. They don't understand. They
right.
just, I just want you to play with me.
Right.
I don't understand why you're so
right.
tired. But that still creates a conflict inside ourselves.
Right.
And so maybe to go back to the inner critic, I know, for example, for myself, because I've worked and worked and worked and worked
mm.
for the last 23 years, it's all I almost know.
Mm. Yes.
And it's what my ego protects at all
right.
costs, even if the cost is me.
Right.
Is is that inner critic for me would then be, even in the curiosity, like my kids want my time, all it brought me was shame.
Right.
Like, you're such a bad mom.
Right.
Right. But you're like, but I have to work.
Right.
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 And, you know, even though there's something inside you that's going, but you are now in a loving, supportive family. You're no longer a single mother like you were, you know, 8 years ago. You're in this loving family. You don't have to. You can spend some time with the kids, but you don't know how to move away. In fact, you almost believe that inner critic. Well, you're just a bad mom. So just go and work some more. That's what we know.
Right.
What are you doing trying to play with the children? That's not what you do. That's not what you're good at. You're good at working.
Exactly.
Go back upstairs and go onto your laptop. Mm-hmm. Like, that's kind of the voice that would play at the back of my mind.
Right. And so what's different about you and many other people is that you can name it, you know? So your inner critic, when I met you, you were very self-critical. You had these unreasonable high standards, which you know, it was just your normal, and you should be able to live up to it. And whenever there was like a hint that you couldn't, you would be very harsh on yourself. And like you said earlier on, and to you, your inner critic was doing you a favor, but you couldn't see the cost. And the cost was that you were driving yourself to an early grave, literally. Yeah. And you couldn't see that. But as you are making the connections now, you are able to name the shame that was underlying that, you know. So again, it goes back to the limiting belief. I only have worth if I perform, if I'm the best, if I work hard, bring money into the family, right? If that's the belief, you hold firmly onto it, then of course you're going to make those choices. And then when your body tells you that you are tired, then you're going to, you know, judge the body. Like, why so weak?
Yes.
Right? And then
that's so funny.
And then kids pull you on the dress and they also want you to play. Who's got time to play? And then somehow shame shows up. And you'd be surprised in South Africa with our history and our shaping, you know, where apartheid was real for so long. There's a lot of unresolved trauma and a lot of us walk around with shame. But your average South African cannot name it. There's just this inner sense of
turmoil.
Turmoil. I love that word, turmoil. Without having the tools, the resources, and the capacity to address the turmoil. And then we go a step further and we say, but, you know, our parents didn't go to therapy and our parents.
And they survived.
And they survived.
Find those people.
Whereas our conditions are so, so, so different. And our kids' shaping is so, so different. And we have the financial resources to buy, you know, the best therapy, the best coaching services. And somehow we just judge ourselves for not being better. And then, of course, we live in the world of social media and, you know, inspirational talks. And if you say it 10 times and you can do it, etc. So it's all very confusing. So coming back to the inner critic, it is not doing you a service. It tried to keep you safe when you were 5 and 6 years old. You're now a grown-ass woman.
I remember you used to say that to me.
Yeah.
Leave 5-year-old Mbeo alone.
Leave her behind.
Leave her behind.
Yes,
she was safe and protected and she's grown. And you are not helping and serving and protecting the 43-year-old version of you. You're doing her a disservice.
So just let me say something quickly, because all the difficulties you have today go back to the 5-year-old Mpeo who feels unseen, unheard, all of that. So part of the journey, so we believe in coaching, you know, it's an inner, it's an inside job. So the more you heal internally, the more you understand yourself, the more you reconnect and re-befriend yourself, you are then also developing the capacity to show up for your 5-year-old. The 5-year-old and her open wounds must be visited at some point. you know, primarily in therapy. And as a deep coach, you know, we do, I don't know if you remember, but you did that whole mapping, life story mapping. Mm. And that was another breakthrough for you because you could see your patterns clearly. You could see the choices you were making and the impact of those choices clearly. So again, there's a place for that kind of inquiry, you know, in terms of your life story, your narrative, and then the choices you make later on in life. Yeah, so I just want to be very clear on that, that we're not saying abandon the five-year-old. Mm. Like, we will never say that because the extent to which you acknowledge the five-year-old and spend time with her and let her know that you are safe today, then she can relax and her needs can be met, not through the adults that she's still waiting to say sorry to her, but through you, the 43-year-old Mpeo. Mm.
And so I want to wrap up our conversation with almost giving some, call it guidance, or yes, just like how we close around the journey to getting unstuck. I think immediately, like if I think about the discussion that we've had, I know so many people who just aren't going to therapy because they're like, I don't want to deal with my childhood. I actually don't want to. I don't want to. Is there, and I think for me, I think in a lot of ways, and maybe that's where maybe we can just talk very quickly about the difference between therapy and coaching, number one. But also, is there a way that somebody, and it's a question, and maybe with time you can learn to get to the place where you're like, okay, fine, let's go there eventually. But a way that somebody can start to look at their patterns without being scared that everybody they go and meet is going to want to start in their childhood. Is that even possible? Because I feel like that's one of the biggest barriers of people looking for help. Is like, I don't want to go back there. I don't think you understand what's back there. And in fact, I'm no longer interested. I feel like I'm healed. I'm done with that. I just want to figure out how to be a better 40-year-old today.
Mm-hmm. Got it. So firstly, the difference between therapy and coaching. So therapy is about healing past wounds, you know, and there's different, again, different modalities, different schools of psychology. I'm happy that we're moving more and more towards somatic, even, you know, psychotherapy. So in other words, also bringing the wisdom of the body into the picture.
I agree.
Coming back to coaching. So coaching is very practical. Coaching works with the adult, the 43-year-old, her dreams, her purpose, her vision, and most importantly, her declaration. So in other words, what matters to you
today?
So today.
What are your values today?
Today. What truly matters to you today? And where do you want to be in 3 years' time, you know, linking it to your vision? And then juxtaposing that against the current reality. So what is the gap between where you are and what truly matters to you, and on top of that, where you want to be in 3 years' time? And then mapping that gap. Then the coaching provides the tools and the strategies. It's very practical. Mm. And the self-awareness also plays a role because you cannot change what you cannot own.
Or name.
Mm. So let's say one of your habits or condition tendencies is, you know, let me use the type two as an example, giving to get, you know. I continue on that path, but I have this big vision of one day opening a healing center, but I don't even know how to identify my needs today, let alone how to communicate it, let alone ask for what I need and want. How am I going to manifest that, you know? So then from once you've done the mapping, then it's baby steps. So this is where I'm at. What will be my next really small step, you know, that will take me closer
to where I want to go?
To where I want to go.
Mm. And I think that that's why, you know, like I said earlier, I've done so much therapy and I've really tried to spend some time getting to know myself. And like you said, I was already quite self-aware, but I think the coaching that I did with you unlocked something and was really powerful because it started where I was. I think a lot of, and I understand the apprehension. I think therapy is such a beautiful gift. Honestly, I feel like if you can do it and you're willing to look at your past wounds and heal them, please do therapy. Yes. It's amazing. But I do feel like if you are just here in middle age and feeling stuck and feeling like I just want to know how to get from here to there.
Right.
I feel like coaching is a fantastic thing to be able to invest in yourself.
In yourself.
In yourself. Just give yourself the gift and get some coaching, because I think it does allow you to understand yourself in the context of the present and give you some tools to move forward in a way that's better and without potentially having to go backwards if it gets there. And you're open to that, like it was for me. I think maybe because I had done therapy before, you were able to unpack a little bit of that with me.
Right.
But you would have been as much able as you did in the first few sessions. It was kind of like, okay, let's just start here where you are.
Right.
I think as a coach, you were just able to see that this person is open to us going beyond the way we've started to go a little bit forward.
Right.
But coaching is such a gift to be able to do if you actually what you want to do is just understand, how do I get from here to there?
Right.
How do I maybe just do things differently, find new patterns, understand and get more choices and be more choiceful so I can open up some space for abundance and joy and happiness in my life, which is what I would love for everybody, just to open up, open that up, just the ability to do that.
Right. And the final thing I want to say on this is that so many people are stuck in life and normalize stuckness. So I appeal to the listeners to not do that.
Don't feel like you have to be stuck.
Right. Or there's no other way, or everybody else is stuck. So who am I not to be stuck? You know, you deserve to live your best life.
You only get one.
You just get one. And so even if you just become passionate about no longer being stuck, you know, and then you use the resources that you have in becoming unstuck. Because when you become unstuck and you're in flow, the world opens up, possibilities opens up, you know, and you're going to be amazed. You're going to be the player who looks back after 18 months and like, oh my gosh, I've walked that road. Mm. It wasn't always easy, but it was so worth it. Mm. So yeah, just invite that into your space. You deserve better. You deserve better than to live a life of misery and being stuck.
Thank you so much, Alicia. And I really just want to thank you for the work that you are able to do with me. And I think one of the greatest things that you said to me when I was like, I think I'm in a midlife crisis, Alicia. I think I'm in complete crisis, you know. And that was after a couple of sessions. It's not like it was session one. It was after a couple of sessions when I was really starting to feel like I'm stuck. I'm stuck and I don't know what to do. And I remember you saying to me, if you had to reframe that into that it's a middle life awakening, that actually what you're feeling and what you could do if you are curious and you are intentional about it is that it could be an awakening and not a crisis.
Right.
And I can't thank you enough for bringing me to that place. It was really so, so helpful to me. So I thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, you're welcome.
I thank you so much for, look, I had to be vulnerable to kind of let people into all my crazy, because, you know, I'm a good crazy now. I was crazy before. I'm good crazy now. And I just want to thank you for that. And I'm excited to let the listener know that as we go and we speak to creators, authors, thinkers, people who are just curious about life over the next few episodes of this podcast, we will be having short sessions with Alicia after every episode to help me unpack what I've learned and what has made me more curious, or something that I think that she could add value to from a more therapeutic professional side. But I'm very excited, and we will see you next time. Thank you, Alicia.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. And final word is, check me out at my website, www.nurturing-growth.co.za. It was such a joy to be here. Thank you, Mpeo.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Okay, bye now.
Bye-bye.